So Rahula asked for mindfulness of breathing meditation, but Buddha first taught him the meditation on metta. So he elaborate on earth element, water element, fire element, air element, and space element. And now he wanted to show the impartiality in meditation, as actually the attitude towards meditation. And he just take the five elements as example. So the first one is Rahula develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable context will not invade your mind and remain. So Buddha said, if you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable context will not invade your mind and remain. Agreeable contact means contact concomitant with eight types of consciousness accompanied by lobha. And disagreeable means those that are concomitant with consciousness accompanied by dosa, two. So these contacts will not invade your mind and remain. That means to have your mind in their grip. So not to have your mind in their grip when you practice meditation like the earth. What it is that is like the earth? So Buddha explained, just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not horrified, humiliated, and disgusted because of that. So too, Rahula, develop meditation like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. So we put clean things or dirty things on earth. We put excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on earth. But the earth is not horrified, not humiliated, and not disgusted because of that. So, just as the earth is indifferent towards these things, you should also develop meditation like the earth. That means whether you meet with anything, you just bear it and not contact that means not let the akusala citta arise in you. It is called impartiality. To bear whether it is good or it is bad. So when you meet with good things also, you are not to be elated, you are not to be happy. And when you meet with bad things also, you do not have dosa in you. So you just have equanimity towards these objects. With regard other elements also, Buddha mentioned the same, Rahula. Develop meditation that is like water. For when you develop meditation that is like water, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contact will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people wash clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood in water, and the water is not horrified, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like water. For when you develop meditation that is like water, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. And then fire elements. Again, Rahula, develop meditation that is like fire. For when you develop meditation that is like fire, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people burn clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood in fire. And the fire is not horrified, humiliated, and disgusted because of that. So do Rahula, develop meditation that is like fire. For when you develop meditation that is like fire, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. And then air element. Rahula, develop meditation that is like air. For when you develop meditation that is like air, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as the air blows on clean things and dirty things, on excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood, and the air is not horrified, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula. Rahula, develop meditation that is like air. For when you develop meditation that is like air, arisen, agreeable, and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Likewise, with space. Rahula, develop meditation that is like space. For when you develop meditation that is like space, arisen, agreeable, and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as space is not established anywhere, so do Rahula, develop meditation that is like space. For when you develop meditation that is like space, arisen, agreeable, and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. And with regard to space, Buddha said, as space is not established anywhere, if space is established in earth, then with the earth it would, when the earth when the earth So, when the earth is destroyed, then the space will be destroyed. And when it is in the mountain also, when the mountain breaks, and it will break also. And when it is in the trees, And when the trees break, it will break also. But now space is not established anywhere. So like space, you should develop meditation. Space is not established anywhere. That means not attached to anything at all. So in the same way, you should practice meditation with your mind not attached to anything. So by these elements, Buddha taught Rahula the attitude towards meditation. So when he practices meditation, he should practice like earth or water or fire or air or space, and just as these does not and get horrified or humiliated or disgusted whether clean things or dirty things are on it. In the same way, you should practice meditation with your mind well balanced and equipoised. After describing the impartiality, Buddha Father talk about things that are cause of impartiality. So by the five elements, he said, develop meditation like earth, water, and so on. But in order to be able to practice meditation like that, Rahula should practice other meditation as well. And so Buddha prescribed other meditation for him. And the first is, Rahula, develop meditation on loving kindness. For when you develop meditation on loving kindness, any ill will be abandoned. Now, loving kindness. it is explained in the Visuddhimagga in detail. And so, if you want to know the in detail, you should go to Visuddhimagga and read it. Loving kindness should not be practiced towards towards some persons, right? Loving kindness should not be practiced towards a person who is who is your enemy or who is neither enemy nor not, or who is dear to you. So, and also loving kindness should not be practiced specifically to a person who is of opposite sex. Because when you practice loving kindness to a person who is of opposite sex, then lust can arise. Now, and this is when you practice loving kindness for the sake of attaining jhanas. And what about you? Developing loving kindness, maybe you do not get jhanas, but you develop loving kindness. So, should you develop loving kindness to your, if you are a woman, then to your father or to your son, and if you are a man, to your mother or to your daughter? Should not practice or should practice? I think you should practice. If you can keep yourself from having such thoughts, lustful thoughts, then you can practice loving kindness on them too. That is, when loving kindness is practiced specifically. But as may all women be well and happy, may all men be well and happy, that is one another thing. So that you can do it quite all right. So I think both are all right, so long as you can keep yourself from having lustful thoughts. And it is said that to a dead person, loving kindness should not be practiced. Now, in the story given in the commentary, the story is of a person who is a jhana attainer. He attained jhana through loving kindness meditation, and so he practiced loving kindness to another person, his teacher, and he got nowhere. So when he got nowhere, he asked another teacher, and that teacher said, look for the object. So when he looked for the object, he knew that that teacher has died, and so he took another person as a as an object and practiced meditation. So in that story, the person does not know that the other person has died. So he thought he is still living, and then still sending thoughts to that person. But what about, say, our parents died, and we know that they have died? I think it is possible to send thoughts to those who have died, because we send thoughts to devas, right? We have not seen the devas, but there may be devas, and then we say, may devas be well, happy and peaceful, and so on. So if we can send to devas, and these devas are what? They may be born as humans, and then died and born as devas, and so on. So I think to parents or whatever person also who has died, and if you know he has died, I think you can send better thoughts to him or to her also. And when we practice, we begin with what? With ourselves. So we begin with ourselves, and we begin with wishing health, happiness, and longevity or whatever for ourselves. And sending thoughts to oneself, you will not get any jhanas. But when you send thoughts to yourself, you can put yourself in as an example, and so you are able to send thoughts to other people. Just as I want to be happy, I want to be healthy and so on, so too other people will be, and so they may all be, and they may be well, happy and peaceful. So in that way, you can take yourself as an example and pervade other beings with loving kindness. And when we have sent thoughts to ourselves, then we send thought to those whom we love, who are dear to us, and then who are neither friends nor enemies, and then last to enemies. Now, enemy means when one has enemy, then one has to send thoughts to him to him too. But if one has no enemy, one does not have to look for an enemy to send thoughts to. So, if one has enemy, then the enemy also should be pervaded with loving kindness. But that comes last. So, first oneself, and then to the dear person, and then to the person who is not dear and not hate, and then the person whom we hate. So these should actually be practiced. Now we practice in a day, right? In one sitting, we said, may I be well, happy, and peaceful. May my dear person be well, happy, and peaceful, and so on. But actually, if you are serious about it, then you should practice yourself first for maybe 5 days or 10 days, and then to those whom you love about 10 or 15 days, and then to those who are neither friends nor enemies, and then to those whom you hate. Because in a day, actually, you cannot go from yourself to the hated person. That is difficult. So actually, you should practice to yourself for, say, 5 days, 10 days, and then to those who are dear, and so on. And when we pervade beings with loving kindness, and we say sentences, and when we say them, it should not be a mechanical repetition of the sentences. It should come from the heart, really love them, and really really love them. Otherwise, it is just a mechanical repetition, and it will not bring good results. And when we say the sentence, I just let you say, may I be well, happy, and peaceful. But if you can say other things as well, like in the book, may all beings be without dosa, without hate, may all beings be without suffering, and may they be able to keep their body well, and so on. And also, there are different kinds of beings in the world, and so according to Metta Sutta also, you can practice Metta. According to Metta Sutta, they say those beings that are long, that are short, that are average, and so on. So according to Metta Sutta also, you can practice meditation. And all these is for ill will to be abandoned. So what is the result of metta meditation? So the result of metta meditation is ill will be abandoned. So if you are a person who has ill will too much, then practice loving kindness meditation, at least to reduce ill will. This is the loving kindness meditation is the samatha meditation, and so you take persons as object of meditation, or you take concepts as object of meditation, not like in vipassana. In vipassana, you the object you keep your mind on must be the ultimate reality, not the concepts. But in samatha meditation, most of the most objects of the samatha meditation are concepts. So the here when you say may all beings be well, happy and peaceful, and that all beings are actually the concepts and not the ultimate reality. And then Buddha said, Rahula, develop meditation on compassion. For when you develop meditation on compassion, any cruelty will be abandoned. So the practice of compassion is to get rid of cruelty, because let us know the word compassion. So compassion here means the desire for that being to be free from suffering. So people in suffering are the object of compassion. Some people may be suffering from disease or whatever, and then you look at him, and then you develop compassion for him. And when you practice compassion, you say, may he be free from the present situation, or may he be free from present suffering, and so on. If we consider the word compassion, then it means it can be developed towards a person who is in suffering. But later on, the commentary said, you can develop compassion on almost any person. Because suppose there is a person who is not in suffering, who is enjoying life and so on. But if he is the one who does the akusala, who does the unwholesome acts, then you can take that person as the object for compassion. This person, though now he is well, for what he does, then he will be reborn in hell and suffer a lot there and so on. So in like that, you can practice compassion on that person. And then suppose there is a person who does not do any akusala, I mean unwholesome acts, and who is well off, but still you can practice compassion on him, because he will be suffering from old age, disease, death, lamentation, and so on, and so you can practice compassion on him too. So may suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and all beings find relief. That is actually karuna, compassion, and not loving kindness. Can you say each sentence so I can follow? Be suffering once, be suffering free. Và mong cho những cái người mà đang chịu fearless be, và những người chưa bị and the grieving shed all grief, và những người nào than khóc thì bớt than khóc, and all beings find relief, và mọi người sẽ được hết đau khổ. Thì đó là cái hành vi meditation is for the eradication or at least a removal of cruelty. Next Buddha says, Rahula, develop meditation on appreciative joy. For when you develop a meditation on appreciative joy, any discontent will be abandoned. So Buddha urged his son Rahula to practice appreciative joy also. Appreciative joy is the desire for someone who is in good situation, not fall away from the present situation, or not fall away from this success. So that is appreciative joy. So you may see something as someone who is enjoying good health, or who is in success, and then say, may he fall does not fall away from the present success or present situation, then you are developing appreciative joy. And any discontent will be abandoned. So when you develop meditation on appreciative joy, then any discontent will be abandoned. Now, any discontent means non-delight in secluded places, and non-delight in doing good things. And that is called discontent here. So that discontent will be abandoned when you practice appreciative joy. Next Buddha said, Rahula, develop meditation on equanimity. For when you develop meditation on equanimity, any aversion will be abandoned. Now, in the commentaries, this equanimity can be practiced only when you get jhana by loving kindness or compassion or appreciative joy. So after you get first jhana, second jhana, third jhana by loving kindness, compassion and appreciative joy, then you develop meditation on equanimity. Meditation on equanimity, when you practice, you say kamasaka. All beings have karma as their own property. That means you do not feel loving kindness or compassion or appreciative joy with regard to that person, but you just practice equanimity, which is specific neutrality. It is not feeling, but it is another kind of upekkha. So that upekkha you practice according to commentary only when you get jhana by loving kindness, compassion and appreciative joy. Now, aversion is something like hitting against the object. That is called aversion. So when you develop the equanimity, then you will be able to get rid of aversion towards all objects. Then, in that case, we are not to develop equanimity. I don't think so. We can also practice equanimity, but not on the jhana basis. When you find someone, say, in distress and you cannot do anything, then you practice equanimity on him. Because this equanimity is a powerful tool against falling into ill will on the one hand, and the joy on the other. So it is important that we practice equanimity also, so that we are able to stay calm against the actual, especially against the bad situations. Then Buddha said, Rahula, develop meditation on foulness. For when you develop meditation on foulness, any lust will be abandoned. So if you are a person who has too much lust, then you should try meditation on foulness. Now, meditation on foulness is described in detail in Visuddhimagga. And so there are different kinds of corpses, bloated corpses, and so on. And nowadays, it is very difficult to see a corpse or to have a dead body for meditation. So what you can do now is a picture, a picture of a dead body, and you can practice foulness on it, or just imagine. So imagine seeing a corpse in different stages of foulness, and then practice foulness. First, you say, "This corpse is foul," and then you apply this foulness on your body also. Just as the dead body is foul, so the living body also, and so on. And then Rahula developed meditation on the perception of impermanence. For when you develop meditation on the perception of impermanence, the conceit, I am, will be abandoned. Now, perception of impermanence means just impermanence. So develop meditation on that perception, that something is impermanent and so on. So when you develop meditation on the perception of impermanence, the conceit I am will be abandoned. Since you see yourself since you see yourself as anicca, impermanent, suffering, and no soul, then there can be no conceit with regard to yourself that I am. So the conceit I am will be abandoned when you practice perception of impermanence. And that perception of impermanence is a vipassana meditation. So when you practice vipassana and you see yourself or whatever with these three characteristics, impermanence, suffering, and non-soul, then you will be able to discard the conceit I am. Actually, when you have the perception of impermanence, then you have also the perception of anatta. So when the perception of anatta becomes developed, then you are able to discard the conceit I am. Okay, how many meditations have we come across? Metta, loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, equanimity, foulness, and perception of impermanence. After teaching Rahula these seven kinds of meditation, now Buddha taught him the meditation on mindfulness of breathing. Buddha said, Rahula, develop meditation on mindfulness of breathing. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it's of great fruit and great benefit. And how is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated? So that it is of great fruit and great benefits, and so on. So the Buddha taught Rahula the mindfulness of breathing say in full. In the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, only the first four are taught. But here, not only the first four, but second four, third four, and fourth four are also taught. And these are all commented upon in the Visuddhimagga. So Visuddhimagga is a book we always turn to with regard to meditation subjects, because it is a handbook for meditating monks. So I must refer you to Visuddhimagga for this teaching, right? Okay, I'll read it. Here, Rahula, a bhikkhu gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut, sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and establish mindfulness in front of him, actually establish mindfulness face to face with the object. Ever mindful, he breathes in, and ever mindful, he breathes out. So here, actually, on the second phrase also, ever is understood. So ever mindful, he breathes in, ever mindful, he breathes out, like that. To the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut. So by this, Buddha points out the suitable place for meditation. The forest is a suitable place for meditation. Root of a tree is a suitable place for meditation. An empty hut or empty place is a suitable place for meditation. And there are other places also. So whatever the place is, if that place is secluded, then it is a place for meditation. And then here Buddha said, he sits down. So he sits down. That means sitting position is the most peaceful position. Standing is not peaceful as sitting, And walking is not peaceful as sitting, lying down. It is too too comfortable, and you will go to sleep when you lie down. So sitting down is the best position. And having folded his legs crosswise, like this, huh? So, and he sits with his legs crossed. And Buddha did not say what kind of cross-legged position he takes. So according to that, we may take any which cross the legs. But the Buddha, on Buddha images, you see Buddha take the one posture, not on this, which is called full lotus posture. So that is the, I think that is the usual position Buddha took. And this is another posture called half lotus posture. So the one leg on the other. So that is more comfortable than the first one. And then the another posture is to put one leg in front of the other. So he folded his he folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect. So he set his upper body, actually, not the whole body. The lower body is crooked. So the upper body is erect. And the upper body is erect means also not rigidly erect. Because if you try to be erect rigidly, you will feel pain in a short time. So the comfortably erect and established mindfulness face to face with the object. That means turn its mind towards the object. And then he breathes in, ever mindful, and he breathes out, ever mindful. So he is aware of the in-breaths and out-breaths.
À, cái chánh niệm trước mặt có nghĩa đây tức là cái tâm mình.
And then Buddha father said, breathing in long, he understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. So he is now sitting and meditating, keeping his mind on the breath, and note in, out, in, out, in, out. And then in the course of keeping his mind on the breath, when he breathes in long, then he is aware that he is breathing long, and when he breathes out long, he is aware that he is breathing out long, and when he breathes in short, he is aware that he is breathing short. And when he breathes out short, he is aware that he breathes out short. So that means not that breathing should be made longer or shorter. Breathing should be go as naturally as possible. But sometimes you may breathe in longer or shorter. And when you breathe in longer, you breathe, you should know that you breathe in longer and so on. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, making clear the whole body of breath, not experiencing. I shall breathe in, making clear the whole body of breath. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experience, making clear the whole body of breath. Now, here, the body means not the whole and the whole body but the body of breath. That means just the breath. So breath is called here body. And I shall breathe in, making clear. So he will practice meditation and then say his breathing in and breathing out are clear. So making the whole body of breath he shall breathe in and he will breathe in and he will breathe out. Experience and making clear the whole body of breath. And now there are people who take the whole body means the whole physical body, but that is not correct, because this is the breathing mindfulness of breathing meditation. And so the object should be breath and not the whole body. If it is a whole body, it will not be breathing meditation, it will be some other meditation. So the whole body here means the whole body of breath, and that whole body of breath making clear. So it clearly seeing the whole breath body, he shall breathe in, and so on. The Pali here is sabba kaya patisamveti. Now sabba means all, kaya means body, and patisamveti. Now patisamveti can mean experiencing, but the commentary here says that it is not experiencing, but it is making clear, making evident. So the translation should be, I shall breathe in, making clear the whole body of breath, and so on. And then he trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. Now here, the bodily formation means simply breath. So breath is called bodily formation because it is formed because it has a body. If we have no body, there can be no in-breath or out-breath. So in-breath or out-breath is called bodily formation here. So tranquilizing the bodily formation means not that the person deliberately tries to tranquilize the bodily formation. Actually, when practicing meditation and when a certain amount of concentration is gained, then the breath becomes subtle. So that is called here, I shall begin tranquilizing the bodily formation. So his breath becomes very very subtle, so that sometimes it even like nothing at all. So in that case, it is called, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation, and I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. This is called the first four methods, let us say. Breathing in long, breathing in and out long, breathing in and out short, and then making clear the whole body, breathing in and out, and tranquilizing the bodily formation or tranquilizing the breath, breathing in and breathing out, these four. So this is the first four things that are taught in both in Mahasatipatthana Sutta and here. And in the commentary, the method of practice is mentioned in detail, and so we should go there to understand the method. And in brief, the yogi practices breathing meditation and he gets jhana. Now, after getting jhana, he made that jhana the object of vipassana meditation. And so he dwells on the jhana factors and then try to see them as impermanent, suffering, no soul, and so on, and until he reach arahantship. So that is mentioned in the commentary. Okay, I think I cannot finish.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.